The following live presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
This is a rather interesting topic, and I think it's also a very timely topic. And the specific topic is mixed in here in the portion of B'Shalach. It's a rather surprising idea, you know. This week's portion is just show-stopping, right? Vayhi B'Shalach Paro et Ha'am. The Jewish people have now gotten out of Egypt. They're headed towards Sinai to receive the Torah, the splitting of the sea. And sandwiched in these monumental events is an interesting detail, right? You could almost title this detail, Jews Will Be Jews. Okay? This is in Perek Tet Zayin, right? The 16th chapter, okay? Pasuk Bet, the second verse, right? Vayilonu kol adat bnei Yisrael al Moshe. The entire congregation of Israel, not just a few, not just the murmurers, everyone, al Moshe v'al Aaron b'midbar. They come to Moshe and Aaron with a significant complaint. Vayomu alehem, and they say to them, Bnei Israel, mi yitemu teinu b'yad Hashem b'yad Tzitzayim. Jewish people, they don't leave any holes barred, right? There's no delicate entry into topics like this. They just let them have it. Okay? You know what? We're happy that we got out of the Red Sea, but we'd rather be dead in Egypt. B'shivteinu al sira basar, sitting on the meat pots, on the flesh pots, b'achleinu lechem lasova, we'd rather be slaves eating than free men dying of starvation. Ki hotzeitem otanu al hamidbar hazeh lehamit et kol hakal hazeh berav, because you've taken us out and you've basically sentenced us to death by starvation. There's no food. Now that's a legitimate complaint. The Jewish people, you know, 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, 3 million people probably, have exited Egypt, and there doesn't seem to be a food plan. That's a pretty legitimate problem. Now, Rashi points out that the Jewish people did bring provisions with them, and those provisions last exactly 61 meals, right? Samach Aleph, which has all sorts of significance, but we'll leave that for now, right? And now that the food has run out, Bnei Israel are rather nervous, because they don't know how they're going to eat. Vayomer Hashem l'Moshe. So God has a plan. Now you got to wonder why this plan is only brought into fruition now. I mean, is the message here that you only get what you want if you're willing to make noise about it, which seems to be sort of, you know, something the Jewish people have inculcated for a long time. It's certainly become the norm in Israel, right? Vayomer Hashem l'Moshe, hineni mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim. I'm going to rain down bread from the heavens. And the people will go out and they'll gather in daily the manna, the man that falls from heaven, leman anasenu, in order that I should be able to test them, hayelech betorati imlo. Will they follow my Torah or not? So this is a very interesting pasuk. First of all, a very interesting verse. First of all, if this plan is already prepared, why does it have to wait until they get through the splitting of the sea and they not complain to Moshe and Aaron? And then immediately Hashem has this prepared. Now Hashem, you know, our understanding of God is that God is endless. There is no past, present, or future because everything is one. So this man was prepared to be given at this moment and at this juncture since the beginning of time. And Hashem certainly knows in advance that the Jewish people are going to complain and that the man will be given. If that's the case, it must be that it's necessary for this to happen in order for the man to fall. Why? Second of all, what is this test that the pasuk speaks of? Right? Leman anasenu hayelech b'torati imlo, in order to test them. What's the big test? And what is the Torah that's spoken of here? Will they follow my Torah? What Torah? Torah hasn't been given yet. So Rashi here points out that this is specifically Torah Taman. that this is specifically the halachot, the ordinances that are set into place regarding man. You know, you can't just go out and get as much man as you want. You have to go out in the morning, and you're only supposed to gather what you need. And there was a miracle that whatever you gathered would be, you know, sort of enough for your family, and you weren't allowed to leave over for the next morning. And on Friday you had to gather double, and Shabbat there was no man. Right? So, I understand that pshat, the context, is that those details are the Torah that we're speaking about here. Why is this so critical? Either you're going to give them food, or you're not going to give them food. What's the message of this man? And then the pasuk goes on, Vaya bayom ha-shishi, on the sixth day, ve'echinu et asher yaviyu, which, by the way, may not mean that they prepared it, it may mean that they measured it. Right? The word la'achin can also mean to measure, like chinu lachem aderech, measure the way, in terms of, you know, placing cities of refuge later on in the Torah. Vaya mishne al asher yilketu yom yom. Right, they'll get double on Fridays. Vayomer Moshe v'Aaron al kol bnei Yisrael. Interesting, Moshe and Aaron tell the Jewish people. Right, this has to be a partnership. Erev v'yedatem ki Hashem otzi etchem eretz Yisrael. This is an unbelievable verse. Tonight you will know that God has taken you out of Egypt. Now think about this. Tonight you're going to know that God took you out of Egypt. What you couldn't know this morning? I mean, they got out of Egypt 2 months ago. They walked through the splitting of the sea. It's unbelievable. So what is this man? And what is this test? And what is the goal here? So this is an interesting question. The question of the man and why this happens in this way. So it's interesting that the Mefarshim, the commentaries, have a number of different possibilities as to what the test of this man is, that I think teach us a lot of different messages, okay? The Ramban, interestingly enough, Nachmanides, suggests that, you know, you think about this, there are two types of tests. There's a test that comes along when things are tough, and we're all familiar with that kind of test, unfortunately, and we view it as a test, and we struggle with it, and sometimes we succeed, and sometimes we don't. In fact, the whole nature of the notion that we call nisayon, right, which we take to mean a test, appears in the story of the binding of Isaac, Akedat Yitzchak, right? V'hai Elohim nisa et Avraham, Hashem tested Avraham. And that's how we're used to it. And in fact, one of the ways of understanding that is that the root of the word nisayon is nes, the miracle, because the ultimate test is something that a person should not be able to achieve. Such that when a person does achieve such a test, when a person does succeed in whatever struggle he enters, it's almost testimony to the fact that he can't be alone, right? The Jewish people in 1948 are given almost a mission. And you could make a case for saying that that mission comes not only from Hashem, not only from God, but from 6 million Jews who are dust over the skies of Europe. It's time for the Jewish people to come home. But it's an impossible test. They're surrounded by 7 Arab armies. They're outnumbered 15 to 1. They have barely an air force, 3 Piper Cub planes and 1 Spitfire. They have no tanks to speak of. They have barely enough arms, right? And they're given this test. And just like Avram should say to God, when God says to Avram, take your son, your only son, the son that you love so much, and offer him up. Avram should say to God, but you told me that this would be the son through whom the Jewish people would be born, so that's impossible. God should say to Avraham, you're right, it's impossible, now go do it. At which point Avraham succeeds, in whatever measure or fashion we've discussed this before, testimony to the fact that there is something miraculous. When the Jewish people declare the state of Israel, when the Arab nations sit down, brokered by the UN in a ceasefire in 1950, that which cannot happen has occurred, testimony to the fact that we have a silent partner, that Hashem is involved. But then sometimes there's a different kind of test. And this kind of test is the type of test that's challenging because we don't even appreciate that it's a test. We're not even aware of the challenges that it's contained. And this type of test is not when things get so bad. This type of test is when things dafka are so good. When it looks as though there's nothing to ask for. When you think you're on top of the world. Think about this exact point in time for the Jewish people. Right? It's interesting. At the end of the splitting of the sea, It says, "Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo." The Jewish people believed in God and in Moshe as his servant. Right? That's what it says. We say this every morning in the morning prayers. What's challenging about that verse is that that implies that prior to the splitting of the sea, the Jewish people did not believe in God. Or at least that they didn't believe in Moshe, his servant, which is an unbelievable thing. So one idea that's suggested by some of the commentaries is that until the Jewish people see Egypt destroyed, they're not really 100% sure that this is all going to work out. Moshe has this whole complicated subterfuge going on. He tells Paro not to let my people go. That's a great line. And Cecil B. DeMille does it well. But it's not really what Moshe says. Moshe says, let us go into the desert for 3 days to serve God. Right? Chag Hashem lanu, let us have a festival. Binareinu v'zkeinenu nelech, we'll go with the old, we'll go with the young. But we're going for 3 days. Which is why at the beginning of this week's portion, the spies who seem to have gone along with the Jews go back to Paro and say, Nivuchim hem bamidbar, right? They're trapped. Segar aleim bamidbar, the desert has closed them in. They don't know where they're going. They haven't come back after 3 days. And so Paro decides that they've overstepped their bounds and he goes after them. Right? So until the Jewish people see that the Egyptians are destroyed, they're not sure that Moshe really is and can deliver what he says. But now the Egyptian army is destroyed. The empire is in ruins. The Jewish people are on the other side of the now reconstituted sea. They're free. So they believe. They're on top of the world. And right when they're on top of the world, God sends them this little ditty. So now what's going to be? How are you going to eat? Like, it's all great that we're creating a state of Israel. It's all great that you know, millions of Jews are going to come back to the diaspora. But how are we going to handle Social Security? So Hashem says, okay, I'm going to give you man. Now it's interesting. Hashem could have done a lot of different things. Hashem could have said there'll be a miracle that the cattle that you brought with you, that they'll just multiply, that they'll produce, you know, dozens of offspring every day. Right? Hashem could have made a miracle that wheat grows in the desert. That would have been an impressive miracle. Right? Why does the man have to come wholly constituted from heaven? And once it does come, Leman is a causative word. It's a word that implies I'm doing something in order that. I'm giving you man in order to test you. I would have thought the test was before the man falls. So why is it that this is a test? So says the Ramban, think about it. What is one of the greatest challenges to human nature? It's when we lose control. Right? When you feel that you're not in control. In fact, the root of a test, the root of all the challenges we have, if you really stop thinking about it, are precisely that we feel that we're not in control. I remember when our daughter was ill, and that first week when we were desperately trying to figure out where to send her. And then at a certain point, you just have to let go. You have to realize you've picked a team. There's a neurologist, there's a pediatric neurosurgeon, there's a mapper, there are nurses and staff. You've got to be able to step back. You've got to realize that there's just not that much more you can do. You can say Tehillim, you can recite Psalms, you can pray. But on a practical level, from within the context of the illusion of this world, not much you can do. Right? Certain types of people have difficulty with this when they drive. Now it's interesting to see that, you know, sometimes a person has a very difficult time sitting in the passenger seat because they really want to be driving. All of us have people like that in our lives, right? The man, on one level, says the Ramban, is the ultimate example of a lack of control. And if you think about the details of the man, that's exactly what's going on. Hashem says, I'm going to give you your sustenance, but I'm not going to give you a week's worth so that you can feel sort of comfortable that it's sitting in your cupboard. I'm just going to give it to you every morning. And you're actually not allowed to leave over from one day to the next in order that you realize that sustenance is really sort of coming from me. And you have to go out and collect it because you have to see that it fell all over again from heaven. That's what the Ramban says. The Ramban suggests that when you really stop to think about it, right, this was the challenge for the Jewish people. They had to put themselves completely in the hand of God. Now you think about this. Right? This is a people that in its entirety was in the hands of their masters. So they have to let go of the prospect that they can now control their destiny and understand that freedom in Judaism does not mean that you're free. It just means that you've chosen to serve something else. The Rambam, in the Mor Nevuchim, in the Guide to the Perplexed, takes this a stage further. He says, you know, sometimes there are tests of the bad times, and sometimes there are tests of the good times. Sometimes the challenge is, you know, when you're stuck. I mean, I remember that some of the most meaningful tefillot, some of the most meaningful prayers I ever had, were said from the turret of a tank, when everything around you is haywire, and you understand that you're really in the hand of Hashem. Like, you can have many illusions, but there's certain situations, especially in the army, when you know you're in Hashem's hands. So then on a certain level, prayer comes much more easily, because you understand exactly what your wish is. You understand what your etzon is. You understand what you're trying to accomplish. You understand where you want to be. You know what it is that you need to think about. But when everything's going well, and the kids are all happy, and the kids are all healthy, and the job is good, and the wife is good, and everything's going wonderful, what do you need to ask for? What is it that you want? What do you aspire to? Right? It's interesting that this is the challenge that we as a people are going through today. You know, we've lost the drive to fight for something. We've lost the dream of making something real because it's already real. Right? The next generation of Jews growing up in Israel is having a very tough time because many of them live in the illusion that we're there already. We're not anywhere near there already. But if you think that you're there already, well, then you don't know what it is you have to fight for. You know? 60 years ago, the question was, how do I get enough bread to stay alive? Today the question is, which iPod do I buy? You know? Can I buy jeans in Old Navy? Will they take them back 2 weeks later? That's a whole different perspective. So it comes along and says Hashem and says, Hineni mamter lachem lachem min hashamayim. I'm going to rain bread from heaven. Leman anasenu, I want to see if you remember where this comes from when you get it every day. This is an amazing concept. Human nature is fascinating. We have the ability to take anything for granted. I remember when we were stationed in Lebanon, and the first time that I went out, that we did a patrol in Beirut, you could cut the tension with a knife, you know. I mean, it was such a big name and had so much foreboding, and we were suddenly sort of deeply aware of the fact that we were in the middle of Lebanon in Beirut doing patrols. You know, Hollywood movies are sort of running around your head. And I remember all the guys are walking around, and you could see their muscles, their tense, and I have to remind people not to put their finger on the trigger, but to keep it over the trigger. And everybody's doing 360s and looking around and making sure that nobody's, you know, sort of planning anything from the rooftops. Anyway, that lasted for about a few days. By the end of the week, people were already walking sort of much more relaxed. They had, like, you know, one hand on the gun, kind of like, you know, over their shoulders. A week later, people, you know, they didn't even have a hand on their gun. I remember about a month after we did this, every day, patrol in, patrol out, patrol in, patrol out. I'm at the gate of the Mutzav, the position that we were in, you know, sort of getting ready to head out to a patrol. And one of the guys suddenly realized he forgot his gun in his barracks. He had to run back to get his gun. That's how much you can get used to being anywhere. So even though man is coming from heaven, how long does it take? Does it take a week, a month, a year? Until you take it so for granted that that becomes natural. Think about it, right? The air that we breathe is manna from heaven, right? The fact that our children are healthy is manna from heaven. The health that we have, the ability to walk, to hear, to see, to talk, all of that, it's manna from heaven. But because we wake up every morning and it becomes part of our assumption, we take it for granted. Will we remember where this comes from? We have so much manna from heaven falling all around us that we've forgotten that it's manna from heaven. And I'll tell you one last thing, and then we have to end. Take this a stage further. If man really comes from heaven, and if everything in this world that we're given is a form of man in one way, shape, or form or another, right? Isn't it interesting that the man comes down exactly as it's meant to come down? There's a fascinating Rashi that describes this phenomenon, right? Rashi says like this. It says, in verse 4 in Pasuk Dalet, again in chapter 16, right? V'yatza'am v'laktu dvarayom b'yomo. The people are supposed to go out and gather in the man daily, right? L'man anasenu, in order to test them. So Rashi says, what does it mean, l'man anasenu? I'm sorry, I got the wrong Rashi here. One second, here we go. Sorry, it's in verse 17. Pasuk Yud Zayin. It says, V'yasu chen b'nei Yisrael. The Jewish people do this. They gather in daily what they're supposed to gather. They're each supposed to gather an omer l'gulgolet, right? One measure for each person in the family. Right? Vayil katu amar bev amamit. Some people obviously went out, they gathered more. Maybe they were bigger, they were stronger, there were more of them. And some people gathered less. Vayamodu va'omer. But then they measured by the omer. In other words, by this standard weight. Velo ha'adif amar bev amamit. Velo echsir. Ish lefi achlo lakatu. Right? There was nobody had more, nobody had less. Everybody ended up gathering what they needed. So Rashi explains, what does this mean? Yesh shalaktu harbei. There were those who gathered much man, because they were all excited. V'yesh shalaktu ma'at, and there were those who gathered only a little. Ukshaba'u lebeitam, and when they came to their homes, madadu ba'omer ish ish, ma shalaktu, they measured by weight, by the omer, each one sort of what they had gathered in. Umatzu, Shehamarbe lilakto lo he'adif al omer lagulgolet. Asher be'o'alo, ve'hamamit lilkot lo matza chaser mi'omer lagulgolet. In other words, if you had four people in your family, you ended up having four omers worth. And if you had 18 people in your family, you ended up having gathered exactly 18 omers worth. Ve'zeu nes gadol shenasabo. And this was a great miracle, says Rashi, that was done with the man. What does this really mean? What's the purpose of this miracle? Right? This is life. This is life. We get so stressed. Are we going to get the bonus? Are we going to earn enough? You know, should I take the extra job so that I'll earn a little more to cover the kids' tutoring? There's a certain fine balance between hishtablut, between realizing that we have to do our bit and we have to be willing to work because Hashem wants us to be partners, and a lack of faith in the assumption that that really is what determines what comes in. The Chafetz Chaim points out that every year in Rosh Hashanah, it's decided what you're going to earn. If you're meant to earn more or you're meant to earn less, whether you run around like a chicken or not, you're going to still earn the same amount. This is true in everything. It's true for people collecting tzedakah as much as it's true for people investing in businesses. And that message is the message of the man, which you can only tap into when you get so used to it coming in that you almost forget that it's Hashem deciding how it comes in. Now think about this. If you could actually tap into this, if we could actually immerse ourselves in this reality and sort of clear the fog of the illusion, it would change the way you live life. It would change the way you live life. You would never get stressed. You wouldn't be stressed that it was difficult to meet the bills at the end of the month, because if you had a difficulty meeting the bills at the end of the month, that would mean that you were meant to have difficulty meeting the bills at the end of the month. There was something to learn. There was something to do. And that, perhaps, is the message of the man. So maybe the fact that the theme of Dvar Yom B'Yomo, that this occurs every day, sort of comes through the man, is precisely juxtaposed to the story of the splitting of the sea, because the sea-splitting events which comes along sometimes in our lives, they're powerful, we have to be aware of them, we have to take note of them, we have to learn from them. But they're not the crust of daily bread. The real daily living, the real challenge, is to be able to tap into the miracle of the man. That every day as we go forward, you know, we put ourselves in the hands of something much greater than we are. And recognize that Hashem gives us what we need, right? And hope, not that Hashem gives us more, but that we have the ability to recognize that whatever it is that Hashem gives us is exactly what we need.
This presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.